The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, folks, and welcome to Typology, the show in which we explore the mystery of the human personality through the lens of the Enneagram. I'm Anthony Skinner, producer of the show. We've got a great guest for you today, Rick Lindreth. He is a professor at the University of Illinois. He's a distinguished achievement professor of ecology and recent associate dean for research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His research focuses on ecology and global change in the forest ecosystems. He's been a Fulbright Fellow and is a fellow of the Ecological Society of America and the Entomological Society of America and the American Association for Advancement of Science. He's a five with a four wing. Ian will get a little deeper into his bio and the interesting way that they ended up connecting. Hey, make sure you follow us on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Ian Morgan Cron and Typology Podcast. That's T-Y-P-O-L-O-G-Y Podcast. And also, if you love the podcast, make sure you leave us a review. It helps others find the show. Hey, that's it for me, Anthony Skinner. Hope you have a fantastic week. With no further ado, and now, here is the host of our show, Ian Cron.
Hey, Rick, welcome to Typology.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We're, Anthony and I were just talking. We're already intimidated. We read your CV and we're like, oh my gosh, we have the smartest person we've ever had on the show. We're going to come out of here looking incredibly dumb.
I doubt it. As my family is always fond of reminding me, yeah, Dad, you're famous to a very small group of people.
Well, we are thrilled that you're here. And there's kind of a funny story about how you ended up on Typology.
Well, there certainly is.
So yeah. Why don't you tell it? Because I think it's great.
Okay. So a couple of months ago, I was in Denver and speaking with a group there called the Denver Institute for Faith and Work. And they have a fellows program. And a number of the fellows and I went out to dinner together. And there were about eight of us sitting around the table. We're having a great conversation. And one of the fellows sitting across from me was this young, bright, engaging, very smart young woman. And we had, the group of us, had a great connection. At some point during the conversation, it switched to Enneagram. I don't know if I asked the question or if they did. And then everyone got all engaged because apparently they use the Enneagram as part of their training. And they wanted to know what I thought of it. And I gave my typical answer was I kind of had to come kicking and screaming into Ennea world. I had some initial major reservations, which we can talk about later if you'd like, but that eventually I understood it as a model. And as George Box, the famous statistician that we've talked about before, Ian, once said, all models are wrong, some are useful. Mm-hmm. And once I got over that, I then found it to be actually very helpful in my own personal life and family life. So we talked about that for quite a while. And then as we broke up from dinner and we're going our separate ways, my host said, oh, that young lady just crossed the street, that's Ian Cron's daughter. You know, and I've been kind of bashing Enneagram and I go, oh, no. But my wife and especially elder daughter are big Enneagram fans, and they're the experts. I'm kind of an imposter. They're the experts. And I thought, okay, this is as close as I will ever get to Ian Cron because I've listened to Typology for a year. So I yelled across the street, hey, Maddie, hold up. And ran across the street and said, this is really, really going to sound bad, but can I get your picture? This is as close to Ian Cron as I'm ever going to get.
That's great.
And then she said, well, yeah, of course. And so I took a selfie, one of maybe three I've taken in my entire life, with your daughter, Maddie. And then she said, well, you know, my dad sometimes has trouble finding fives wanting to be on the show.
That's great.
Well, that's not surprising. Do you mind if I give him your name? And I said, no. So, and here we are.
And here we are. Well, and I'm delighted. I am delighted. And sometimes it is hard to find fives who want to be on the show because investigators are this type that we sometimes call also observers.
Right.
Tend to be quite private. This sort of a interview format can be a little intimidating or anxiety provoking for fives.
Sure. Absolutely.
Is that true for you? Because you do a lot of work like this.
Yeah, but I've never gotten over being being intimidated or perhaps even terrified at moments. But I've gotten used to it.
Wow. Okay, so I would like to have you describe what an Enneagram 5 is and what it's like, just in brief, what it's like to be an Enneagram 5.
So as an Enneagram 5, first of all, I'm pretty uniquely attuned to my environment. I see, observe, hear just about everything going on around me. And I've always been that way. And it took me a long time in life to figure out that other people are not. Mm-hmm. So I'm very observant. And I think that's probably what has served me well in being a scientist. I love information. I love knowledge. I love being, in a sense, as close to being omniscient as, because I like knowing about everything. I don't care if we're going on a trip, or if I'm, reading a manual on a new tool or whatever. I just like knowing how stuff works and how the world works. Mm. So I'm always collecting information. But as a five, I've also, it's been a lifelong pursuit to try to understand my emotional being, who I am as an emotional person. Because I grew up as a kid where emotions were, in some ways, not allowed. They certainly weren't discussed. And so for a couple of decades, I was emotionally distant from myself. And for most of my life, I've been somewhat emotionally distant from others because I just don't talk about emotions. For many, many years of our marriage, my wife felt I didn't have emotions. And actually, as a five with a four wing, no, I feel emotions intensely, but I just don't express them. Mm-hmm. So, I'll hold them in, I'll process them. Well, what I say to my wife and others is, I don't like to talk about feelings until I've analyzed, classified, categorized them, and put them, tucked them away. And after I've analyzed and classified them, there's no need to talk about them. So,
wow.
That's kind of a bit of my life as a five with a four wing.
Wow, there was a lot of insight there that I had never really heard a five articulate so clearly before.
Right, right.
I mean, really, one of the things you just said that I want to just sort of peg back on is emotionally distant from yourself. I mean, most of the time people talk about, or fives talk about, emotional distance from others.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've never heard a five talk about being emotionally distant from themselves. What does that mean? What's that like?
Wow.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I'm pretty good at experiencing emotion very briefly and then tucking it away somewhere in the back of my mind to be processed later.
Mm.
So I can go throughout life without actually experiencing life on an emotional basis, but I kind of tuck things away. If something very upsetting or emotional happens, my first response is to get by myself, go out for a walk, and process it by myself, think it through, and then try to deal with it. But mostly, emotions are things that I have to work to be attuned to, and then to try to actually experience them as emotions rather than simply analyze them as yet another stream of information coming into my life.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. But for a four who is exquisitely attuned and oftentimes awash in my feelings, yeah. who has to remind himself from time to time that critical thinking might be useful. You know,
right.
it's again, we're describing different normals.
Yeah.
People have different normals. And boy, when you understand that, you begin to have compassion. You also begin to have appreciation for the diversity of the world
right.
in which we live.
Right.
And so really, that's almost worth the whole price of admission hearing you talk about
okay.
you know, emotional distance from yourself.
So, right. We might get around to this later, but one of my practices for the last couple of years has been to reduce that distance. So when I am experiencing an emotion, to take the time and really experience it in the moment.
Mm.
Hold it in my head and think about it for 20 seconds. That's my neuroplasticity rule.
Right.
So if I can engage with this thought or engage with this emotion for 20 seconds, it is going to help rewire my brain to accommodate emotions probably in a more healthy way.
Right. Oh, so I love, you know, I've been studying a lot in the last few years or reading a lot, studies, maybe giving myself more credit than I should, about the way the brain works and neuroplasticity and how do we change. And that one of the things you're just pointing to is that for every type, for every human being, we are more capable of change than any of us really give ourselves
absolutely.
Credit for.
Right.
We really can do a lot of rewiring to make ourselves or maybe to cooperate with our God-given nature to develop in directions that we, you know, that we really need to develop.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm. So, so good. Now, it sounded at the beginning like if you were going to pick a name for, a signifier for your type, that maybe being the observer is a little bit better even than the investigator as a signifier.
I'm not so sure, actually.
Okay.
I am an observer, but I like the word explorer.
Ooh.
That's good.
Because observer seems to be too detached for me. Certainly, I do observe a lot, but I just love to explore, to dive in, acquire information, and engage with the world around me. So I think that observer seems to be a little bit too passive for how I would view myself.
That's really good. And I'm going to think about the idea that maybe the another way of talking about fives is as the explorer.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, one of the things that I often ask people is, you know, what is your happiness program? So I think everybody has a program for happiness that they learn as a kid, right? Like if
right.
I do this, I will be happy, or I will be safe, or whatever it may be. What's the happiness program for a five? If I blank, I will be, you know, happy, safe, loved, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes back to the omniscience, or maybe even more broadly than omniscience, is omnicompetence. If I'm feeling fully competent in all dimensions of my activities, then I feel good. And so I think my life has always been striving to become fully competent in everything I do and everything I think.
Right.
And you know, that can be a challenge.
Yeah.
Given the immensity of the world.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you know, I think for lots of fives, as I understand it, that competency is or the pursuit of competency is a compensation for the fear of incompetency.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Right. The feeling that of inadequacy in the face of an overwhelming world.
Right.
And also that the pursuit of knowledge is a defense against a world that feels unpredictable, chaotic, and overly demanding of the five, right? Is that your experience?
Well, certainly I think the pursuit of knowledge has had some of that as a basis. Because if I can understand everything about my world, there won't be things that surprise me or threaten me mm-hmm. as readily. I had a very, very stable childhood. I didn't have unknown threats that would come at me, you know, out of the blue. Loving parents, loving good family. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't actually know how to put that question into place with respect to my upbringing, you know, what I was trying to protect from.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about emotions for a second.
Okay.
And I guess this is probably true for, you know, it's unique to every five's journey. But what emotions in particular are most difficult for you?
Oh, gosh. I've never thought about that. Yeah, and here's the five, giving 2 minutes of thought before he'll answer. I actually, one of the things that comes to mind is I actually respond emotionally pretty strongly to life around me. And when I was a child, those emotions oftentimes got the better of me.
Mm.
And I would be embarrassed. You know, I would cry easier than my friends and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And so I think I chose to just ward them off or wall them off. And that was perhaps a defense response. One of the emotions that I'm affected by frequently and that for some reason is difficult for me to communicate is I'm touched by beauty.
Mm-hmm.
In words, mm-hmm. in music, and I'll read three sentences out of anything, a book, an article, and I'll almost literally be moved to tears.
Mm.
But I'll be hesitant to express it because I might be moved to tears. Mm. I don't know if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yes.
And I think that goes back to, you know, it's just, it's not okay to show emotion. That was definitely a strong part of my upbringing.
Mm.
Not only are emotions really not okay, but it's definitely not okay to express them.
Mm.
So when I'm feeling touched by things transcendent, things of beauty, etc., it's hard for me to communicate that even to those I love around me. And partly because for some of those around me, they'd go, huh, what? I don't get it. And then I feel all defeated, like, oh, I just had this, you know, strong emotional response and nobody else feels that way.
Mm.
You know, it's not that difficult for me to feel sadness or to feel anger or those. It's not like I try to push them.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun. Live Boricua.
Those aside.
So I want to read you something that you sent me.
Okay.
Because you actually just touched on something that is really great. And by the way, it's a signature, I think, with fives, and people don't really get this,
which is
this idea of being deeply touched by beauty, by transcendence. And maybe a word that I would use there is awe.
Yes, perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
So listen to this, Anthony. This was a writing from Rick. He says, you're talking about brook trout here because you're a fly fisherman.
Yes, right. Okay.
And then you write this. I love them for who I become in their presence.
Mm.
In the pursuit of brook trout, my scientific mind, artistic soul, and athletic body converge to the rhythm of a four-count beat. I move naturally, effortlessly, at the pinnacle of mindfulness. The world is reduced to the confluence of air, stone, and water, liquid grace. And, on occasion, I am treated to a completely inordinate amount of pleasure by by winning a battle of wits with a creature whose brain is the size of a pea.
That is beautiful.
Is that not beautiful?
Oh, my word. I love
that. And what I love about that, and it's not just fives with four. I mean, I think fives, so what you're getting there is the powers of observation.
Right.
But the sense of awe, the transcendence of the moment, right, being articulated. It's beautiful writing. And you're also getting the humor side of the five too, which is very subtle and wonderful.
That's right.
Just like you know, being in a battle of wits with a creature whose brain is the size of a pea.
Yes.
And you know, by the way, I think what this reminds me of, and I've never really thought about this. I wonder if Annie Dillard is a five with a four or a four with a five. For those who don't know Annie Dillard, she won the Pulitzer Prize at what, maybe 27 or 28 years old for Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, which is like a fives heaven. I mean, I'm sure you've read it a couple of times, right?
I've actually not read it. So now I'm going to have to add
it.
Oh
my gosh, Rick, you have got to read.
Okay.
Pilgrim. I mean, it is really a remarkable book written with an eye for observation that is so stunning about the natural world.
Wow.
It's extraordinary.
Wow.
Her writing extraordinary.
I read a number of books of that ilk, so I'll definitely have to read that one.
Well, someone credit Annie Dillard. Some will credit her with really launching that entire genre of nature writing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, that book was a game changer for me. And I say it because your writing has both this observation, this sort of distant observing thing, but then this sense of awe and transcendence. And I hear fives. Like, do you love Bach?
Oh, yes. Yes. I used to listen to Bach when I would study in college.
Right. I have fives tell me all the time they love Bach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you love jazz?
Not really.
Okay. I know a lot of fives who do, right?
Okay.
There's something about improvisation that they find sort of winning some way for them. But with Bach, you know, you have beauty, but this almost mathematical precision happening at the same time.
Right.
And for the five, it's almost like it lights up some part of their brain. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So
right.
Thank you for raising that whole issue of beauty, observing, but awe. That fives can be gripped with awe. They're not machines, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not like they actually are profoundly spiritual people. Some of the greatest Zen masters, for example, are fives.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Their ability to practice mindfulness, and meditation, to be sort of observe the stream of emotions versus getting swept up in them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And hey, and thanks for those comments about humor. This is going to sound odd. I actually think I'm pretty funny.
Yeah.
but it's very subtle.
Yes.
And dry. And if you're not listening, you're not going to get it.
No.
Which made me really sad when my two daughters left home because they think I'm pretty funny. My wife just kind of rolls her eyes most of the time.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, fives have a sense of irony.
Yes, exactly.
And I have a story about a five. One of my best friends, I've had two best friends who were fives. He and I were in Santiago, Chile. And I had been there before. And I said, well, look, we got to go out to dinner. There's a wonderful restaurant in downtown Santiago I want to take you to. I gave the address to the cab driver, and I must have given the wrong address. We got taken to and dropped off in the worst part of town. And we are dressed like in blazers.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, ties.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Loafers. I mean, we look like a couple of well-heeled guys from America standing. And we're standing on an island between two three-lane roads going back in the crazy traffic. Well, down the this island comes stumbling this guy who is clearly wrecked drunk, right? Just wrecked drunk. And he stumbles up to my friend, and I'm trying to figure out what are we going to do here. He stumbles up to my friend and proceeds to throw up all over his
his
shoes and the bottom of his pants.
Oh,
and then walks away. Right?
Oh my gosh.
So my friend looks at me. He just turns his head. He's like, he is such a five. He looks at me No expression on his face. He just looks at me and he goes, "These are not our people." Just a straight face. Gosh. And he just dropped the line so perfectly that I howled in the middle of this thing, laughing my head off.
That's great.
He just looks down at his shoes and he looks up and he goes, "These are not our people."
Oh, wow.
That's a five response to the moment, man. Fantastic.
That's
right?
Hilarious.
Wow. All right. So what happens when you have to connect emotionally, like, with your students? I mean, are most of your students, do you think, is there a disproportionate number of them who are fives? But, and if not, how is it that you make, because emotions tend to be the place where we often make connections with other people at the level of emotions. Right. How do you ensure that you're creating a really solid attachment with your students?
Mm-hmm. And I think here mostly about graduate students or others in my research group, because as an instructor in a classroom, you don't really have that much opportunity to connect emotionally. But certainly with my research group, people who I work with day after day for 5 years or so at a time, you do connect with them. And in those cases, you know, we take a regular opportunity to talk about highs and lows. What's going on? What are the factors going on in life? Good things, bad things. We get to know each other as individuals. We have regular lab meetings in which we share more about our individual lives. And then I have regular one-on-one meetings with my students, and I try to make it clear to them that I'm available on a personal level, and sometimes they have big personal issues that come up with pursuing a PhD, or sometimes it's family issues, whatever, and we talk about them. Mm. And, you know, understanding now for many, many years that I tend to come off as distant and aloof, I really try to compensate, be aware of that, and connect with people in a way that they can feel that I'm safe, trustworthy, and understanding.
Mm. I love that you use the word awareness. This is such a big theme for me. You know, and of course, in the spiritual life, I do believe, because I've been so influenced by the contemplative stream, the Thomas Mertens, who I think, you know, there's a four with a very strong five wing, you know, someone who had an incredible intellect, but also an incredible artist's heart, you know, and the just extraordinary, right? The whole purpose of the spiritual journey is to wake up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. In many different dimensions of our lives, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it's been mostly waking up to the emotional as well as the spiritual components of life.
Yes. Well, I what you're describing, you know, on that stream and your encounter with Brook Trout is a moment of awakening.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a moment of coming alive, really.
Yes.
And of recognizing right now I feel fully human. I feel fully engaged. I feel fully alive.
Mm.
And with all senses deeply attuned to what's going on around me.
Mm. I guess Jean-Pierre de Caussade, the great Jesuit, who would say that would be partaking in the sacrament of the present moment.
Exactly. Good words.
Yeah. Which is, of course, a precursor by 300 years to Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. I mean, basically, Tolle took a Christian work, The Sacrament of the Present Moment by Jean-Pierre de Caussade, the Jesuit, and really did a fairly masterful job of bringing it into a secular space, you know, kind of rinsing it of some of the purely Christian language. But contemporizing it and making it available to lots of people, because it's just perennial wisdom. We need to wake up and live in the moment that is that is present to us right now.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think a five could do that quite well. For sevens, it's far more difficult. They're living into the future. The present moment is elusive. But it sounds to me like for you, you have the ability as a five to live with sustained attention to the present moment.
Mm-hmm. I've been practicing it. I mean,
tell me about that. Tell me about it. Tell me about that. That's important.
Well, I think it goes back to the comment a little while ago about when I'm in, It goes back to the comment I had a few moments ago about when I'm experiencing something to actually recognize I'm experiencing this, whether it's a pleasant thought, an unpleasant thought, a fun emotion, a sadness, and actually pausing and soaking in it, you know, that 20, 30 seconds.
Wow.
Engaging it and then moving on rather than just letting it flit into my head, pushing it out, and going about my business.
Mm. Yes, I've heard some teachers refer to that as the sacred pause.
Yes, exactly.
Right? The sacred pause in the moment to stop, to honor, to savor, to experience what life has presented to us in this moment, whether it's whether it's eating a tangerine and fully experiencing the tangerine, or being present to an emotion, whatever comes to us. So I believe all of what we're talking about here is learning to live with conscious, wakeful intentionality.
Excellent.
Yeah,
I agree.
That's so beautiful. And boy, that's a skill you really need in scientific research, I would imagine.
Well, certainly, because there's just so much going on all the time. And to do science well, you need to be very observant. And those who are not find out about it in very, you know, difficult ways sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Learning those observational skills is really important.
So I know that you've done some mentoring. You know, you obviously are mentoring grad students. You're raising up the next generation of scientists in your field of ecology, which is terribly important. You know, you're at the cutting edge of what may determine our survival as a species, you know.
Right, right.
What would you tell a 25-year-old if they were they to ask you the question, how can I live life to the full as a as a human being? What do I need to do? What do you know, Dr. Lindroth, that I need to know in order to live life fully?
And they knew they were a five. They understood.
Sure.
Okay. So one of the things I would say is embrace being a five. I actually, you know, once I understood Enneagram types, it really helped me to become comfortable with who I am as a person and not feel that I'm somehow faulty in certain areas, which we all are, of course, but to be comfortable with the unique characteristics that I have. And by and large, I kind of like them. And I would encourage others to embrace being a five, embrace who you are, and then use it to serve others. So fives, as you well know, become vast storehouses of information, but oftentimes are unwilling to share that with others. And yet sharing of that can be very helpful under the right circumstances. And so I would encourage people to develop relationships, certainly to develop their emotional side in ways that allow them to use that knowledge and information that they gather to not only better their own lives, but better the lives of the people around them. You know, I have a small number of really good friends, and I do think one of the things they like about hanging out with me is, especially if we're outdoors, is I'm always giving them fun information about the world. And yet I'm rarely willing to venture that information just on my own because I'm thinking, oh, they're not going to think this is interesting, or so I usually wait to be asked. I would I think I would encourage others to be more willing to share that information. And then certainly the development of the emotional maturity in ways that people can come to understand and accept their emotions and learn to process them in the now rather than in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right. Delaying the experience of emotions and in the moment. I've loved this conversation. And
so
I have such a deep affection for fives, who I think, at least in the relational sphere, are the most misunderstood number on the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm.
I think you were telling me earlier that for the longest time, your wife thought you didn't have emotions.
Exactly.
And that's a, you know, I understand how these dynamics arise in relationships, you know. But nothing could be further from the truth. Fives are some of the most sensitive types I know on the Enneagram. You may not see it. You may not see it playing on their face, the sensitivity.
Right. Oh, sure.
I'm very sensitive, but you'll read it on my face very clearly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that fives are exquisitely sensitive. And you were actually mentioning it to you as a child. I see it with five children. You know, they are very sensitive. They're almost so attuned to what's going on. They're picking up everything that could be hurtful in some ways.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, did you have an awkward social childhood at school at all? Did you feel like you really belonged? You were in the stream, the social stream?
No. You know, I always had a few good friends, but I didn't feel like I was, you know, part of the popular crowd or anything like that.
Right.
I was always a little bit on the fringe.
Yes.
I didn't feel like an outcast, but certainly didn't feel like I was part of the crowd, as they would say. Right.
Yeah. Well, incredibly helpful. It's always great to have a five that is willing to come on the show and really just talk about what I think others perceive as a very mysterious interior world, you know, of the five. So I'm so glad you were on. I can't thank you enough.
Well, hey, I've appreciated the opportunity. It's been fun. And thank you for all you've done to help people like me understand Enneagram and ultimately to understand ourselves and our relationships better than we would have otherwise.
Well, this is such a great part of my life is I get to talk to interesting people every day about their soul's journey.
Yeah.
How do people find out more about what you're doing?
They certainly could go to my website if I don't have the URL in my head, but Google my name and my website will come up.
Right.
I'm also a part of the BioLogos Speakers Bureau. So if they're familiar with BioLogos, or they could Google BioLogos and find out more about me there as well.
Wonderful. Well, listen, peace and all good things to you. And I hope we meet in person one day soon.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you. I've enjoyed the time together.
Great. Thanks. Hey, Typology Tribe. Wow, that was a rich conversation. I'm so glad you got to be a part of it. Make sure to listen to us next week. We love you. And remember, be yourself. Everybody else is already taken.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.